The beginning of the First World War is a familiar story. The assassination of Franz Ferdinand, the heir to the Austro-Hungarian Empire, was the spark that ignited the powder keg, and within a month, most European countries were at war with one another. Similarly, the details of the end of the Great War are also well known. Kaiser Wilhelm, faced with a battered German army and a collapsing Western flank, asked to negotiate a peace with President Wilson, and at 11 a.m. on November 11, 1918, an armistice went into effect. But what finally led to the Allied victory after four bloody years of combat? What was the proverbial straw that broke the German army's back? Military historian Nick Lloyd answers those questions in his new book, 100 Days, The Campaign That Ended World War I. Lloyd is a senior lecturer in defense studies at King's College in London and joins us on the roundtable this morning. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. What brought you to this particular campaign and trying to right a wrong in your mind?
Well, obviously there's a family connection there. My great uncle, Private Tom Cottrell, was killed in the very last phase of the Great War when he was just 19 years old, and he died on the 27th of September 1918. He was a member of the British Expeditionary Force and was killed in one of the pivotal last battles. Of course, I was always interested in the war. I've written about the war before. But in terms certainly of British memory of the war, the last phase is hardly ever get to mention. And I think, as you said in the introduction, most of our consciousness, most of our understanding is very much about the main attritional battles in the middle years of the war, the Somme particularly. The last phase is always always left off the histories of the war. So I came to write the book really out of a desire to find out more about how he was killed and what it meant and what those battles really did for the end of the war.
In looking at this campaign, give us a bit of a background that brought us to this point, this 100 days that ultimately ended the war.
Well, of course, 1918 is the great year of decision. I mean, it begins with the German Spring Offensive, where Germany brings all her troops back from Russia on the east. Of course, Russia has collapsed in 1917, so it brings back all of her troops, all of her combat strength, for one massive blow on the Western Front that is intended to win the war before the Americans can deploy on the Western Front in strength. The Americans are in. They've been in since April 1917, but they're not there in strength. So what you see is a huge series of German offensives that culminate in July on the Marne, the River Marne. But by this point, the German army has not achieved victory. The Allies have held on. There is a counterattack on the Marne on 18th of July. The French and the Americans go into that battle, and that battle at the Marne really turns the tide. That is when the initiative is taken away from the German army. And of course, by the last weeks of July, the front settles down, and that really sets the scene for the final series of Allied offensives that will drive the German army out of the gains that it's made, and then eventually produce the armistice and the ceasefire.
Talk a little bit about the defeat of the German army and the questions that ultimately still swirl around the end of the war even today.
Yeah, I think, well, one of the reasons that perhaps people haven't looked at this period is the assumption that the German army is not really defeated in 1918. This is the old stab in the back myth that was propagated by Hitler and his cronies, the idea that actually the German army, because it's still on occupied enemy soil at the end of the war, it hasn't really lost. But I think what I try to do in the book is show you actually the army, the German army, by the end of the war is utterly crippled. It is about to break apart. And they sue for an armistice because they know that if the war continues for much longer, they're going to lose. The army is going to be utterly destroyed. That's why they try and make the best of it in what's a very bad situation. For the Allies, they make a decision that actually they get pretty much what they want, the evacuation of occupied territory, the cessation of submarine warfare, and an acknowledgement of German wrongs. But of course, the Allies, for many reasons, which I go into in the book, decide they don't want to continue the war and go into and invade Germany. And of course, there, really, the scene is now set for the the later the Treaty of Versailles and the debates that come out of that war, whether the Allies really won, whether they should have carried on, or whether Germany was actually defeated.
And that's one of those lingering questions, isn't it? Could an invasion of Germany have been possible?
It would have been possible. It would have been difficult, but it would have been possible. The Americans under General Pershing certainly advocate that. They say, we've got to keep going. We've got to actually really take apart the German army and make it very clear to the German people that they have lost, in some cases similar to 1945. The British and French really are suffering now. The French army is on its last legs. It's on its knees. It doesn't really have much combat capability left anymore. The British are in a better situation, but they're finding it much more difficult to keep going because logistically it's very difficult. They're far away from their railheads. The German army is destroying everything in its path. So actually continuing that advance into November and maybe December of 1918 would have been very, very challenging. Just simply getting the supplies, the men, the food up to the front line was very, very difficult. But I think in hindsight you could probably say that Pershing was right and that they should have carried on.
When you look at this 100 Days campaign and this obviously pivotal 4 months, a very bloody 4 months, and it does have a sort of a natural arc to it of a beginning, a middle, and an end for you as a historian and ultimately as a storyteller, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, you do have the series of offensives that really climax in late September, where there's a whole series of Allied offensives. The Americans attack in the Meuse-Argonne, the British attack at the Canal du Nord, and there's an attack in Flanders. There's a whole series of offensives that really climax in late September when the German defensive position known as the Hindenburg Line is broken. And at that point, the German army realized that there's no way they can continue the fight. There's no more defensive positions left. They're just going to have to retreat to the Rhine. So there's that sort of sense of things are building up. And at that point, once the German army lose their hold on the Hindenburg Line, the senior commander, General Ludendorff, realizes that the game is over. And then, of course, the story changes into the beginnings of peace negotiations.
When you think of, and this gets back to our original point of how this time is remembered and how historians look at it, what do you think we have learned that ultimately sets us up for further strife in that region and further troubles down the line?
Well, I think that what I try and say is the book is that the 100 Days is not a it's not a futile period. It's not a futile series of campaigns. It's very bloody, but it achieves an objective. It gets the German army to sue for peace. And I think the problem then is what happens next. The Allies, obviously, we go to the Treaty of Versailles, and there are differing ideas about how much Germany should pay and what Germany should do. And I think really the tragedy then of appeasement and the growth of the Nazi Party, obviously, from 1933, really is... It's about the interwar period, and it's how the leaders of Britain, France, and America collectively let that opportunity slip from their grasp, and they let Germany rise again. So what I try and say is it's very difficult to blame the Second World War necessarily on the 100 Days campaign or anything to do with that. It is really the interwar period where that advantage that the Allies gain after the Second Battle of the Marne in July, they lose.
In the epilogue to your book, you talk about the battlefields of the 100 Days are seldom visited. And I'm curious as to what you think that we could benefit from visiting those hallowed grounds and ultimately get from that experience.
Well, I think in one part, it is really just paying respects and paying tribute to those who lost their lives, as I put in the book, within sight of the finishing line. And as I say, I think those people that lost their lives in the final months of the war really are a lost generation. I think more generally, looking at the end of the war, it serves to remind us again about futility. This is a war that was, at the end of the day, it was won, and that our collective sort of, certainly in Britain, the sort of focus and the concentration on the difficult battles earlier in the war, in the Somme and Passchendaele, is really only a partial story of the First World War. It's not the entirety of the story. The war does end. The German army does sue for peace. And I think to try and understand the First World War, it is really, really important to remember that and to really challenge this idea that it was simply a sort of maddeningly futile and pointless war.
The name of the book is 100 Days, The Campaign That Ended World War I. It is published by Basic Books. Nick Lloyd, thank you very much for sharing your expertise with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Again, the title of the book, 100 Days, published by Basic Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.